Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. The title of this program is World Watchers. It's broadcast number 748, April the 7th, 1986. And I want to remind old listeners or new listeners that if you want the bibliography sheets, the sources of newspapers or magazines or addresses that I put on the air that you want to write for something or look it up, write to me, May, M-A-E, Bressel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel, California, 93923. More of you are doing this, and I'm very happy about that and happy to give you the sources of information. So when you share these things with friends or family or whoever you, I hope, share them with and don't listen alone, you can pull out these sheets and keep them in chronological order in a three-hole notebook and read them like a book at the end of the year, and then don't ask me, why don't you write a book and have your little sheets of paper all folded up in envelopes somewhere in the desk. Now, in the 23 years that I've done research, I've thought a lot about what's happening to this country, how the country was going to go. It's gone exactly as anticipated or expected, if you've listened to this program any length of time. And if somebody were to say, what right now do you think would make any way change the course of this country and what is happening, which is a redundant question because people don't ask it. In the second place, they can't do it. So maybe I'm talking to myself or a handful of you. I would say, number one, open up the grave in Houston, Texas, that is named for Howard Hughes, and prove beyond any doubt, with not the Central Intelligence Agency or the Defense Department there, that the person in that grave is not Vance Cooper. I bring that up because this is the 10th anniversary of the time that a person was flown in from Acapulco, Mexico, to Houston, Texas. It was April the 5th, 1976, 10 years ago. And I have reason to believe and have studied it very carefully for 10 years, every book and every article I could ever get on the Howard Hughes story and his personal friends, such as Terry Moore and other people who knew him that I've spent a lot of time with. I think that to get to the Howard Hughes empire is very, very important. Remember, he wanted to choose our presidents, and he handpicked Paul Laxalt, who was the GOP fundraiser for Ronald Reagan's last two elections. And Laxalt flies into the Philippines to appear as a hero of democracy to escort Mr. Marcos out after going along with him all these years, and Ronald Reagan and Nancy very close to Fernando Marcos and the family, and the politics and all the mafia money and all the dirty money and all the dirty tricks. Paul Laxalt looks very cling as he goes there to get Marcos out at the last moment because it's falling in anyway. But Laxalt is the fundraiser for this party. He raised the money to put Reagan in. He was handpicked by this unknown Hughes organization to eventually become president of the United States. If I had three wishes, I would ask the Congress of the United States to take Fritz Kramer, the plans officer of the Pentagon, the man behind the Korean War, the Vietnam War, Central America, South America, the overthrow of Mossadegh, putting in the Shah, bringing with Henry Kissinger the narcotics traffic from Middle East, Southeast Asia, South America with Reverend Moon, and the Korean and Taiwan mafia and death squads. I want Fritz Kramer fingerprinted publicly and prove that he is not Adolf Hitler's general. I would want that done if I had a second wish. And if I had a third, I would go thoroughly into Charles Willoughby and Albert Wiedemeyer and their role with Hitler's Kriegsakademie in Berlin and their linkage to Douglas MacArthur and Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig. Those are diseases that we have developed in this country. They've grown like the serpent's egg. They are a cancer. And the reason I bring up the Hughes, and then I threw in two more wishes, as I say, is the 10th anniversary since that body was cashed in. There was an article in the Monterey Herald that may or may not have been syndicated by Robert Macy this week, and it goes into brief segments of Howard Hughes' life. And it tells how much property he bought in Las Vegas and elsewhere in Los Angeles and around the West Coast, not to mention the Medical Institute. His father invented a tool bit, a drill bit, that turned rock into mud And out of that, Howard began to get 50 to 60 million a year when he was 19 years old. There wasn't an oil company that could drill without the used drill, and he had that amount of money. And in 1966, he sold his share to TWA, which he always wanted to own. And this is the beginning of the taking over of Vegas and the Mafia and Robert Mayhew and the CIA, and taking the cash of a person who, from 66, was never seen publicly, was in a Boston hospital, and this article mentions that he has all this cash. He checks out of a Boston hospital where there was this alleged brain surgery. He arrives in Vegas in the dark of night, leaves in 1970, and goes down to the Bahamas in the dark of night, is never seen by Chester Davis, Robert Mayhew, or any person that had business dealings with him. It was a faceless body. So they took what he bought for $80 million, TWA, became $546 million, and with that cash, he then goes to Vegas. Now, the account says that Howard's first brush or contact with Robert Mayhew was in 1954 when he was visible, which was true at that time. And Mayhew was to investigate a woman that Howard would, in quotes, marry, Jean Peters. Now, there isn't a physical piece of truth or paper or anything to prove that Jean Peters married him. In Tonopah, and that's a tiny town in Nevada, in 1957, and the cover story was that she divorced him in 1971, 14 years later, and 1947 was the year that he was buried off that Greek island, and Aristotle Onassis had him over there. Jackie Onassis, who was there at the time, got $26 million settlement from the Hughes estate, and Jean Peters got $26 million from the Hughes estate for this whole role where she also wasn't a part and never saw or had sex or was with a person named Howard Hughes. He was kept in a dark room with wood over the windows, and even airplanes or helicopters flying by just by chance couldn't get a picture of anybody in that room. Robert Mayhew went on to hire the assassination teams that were involved in the murder of John Kennedy, not only picking Paul Laxalt, and Hughes was behind the early candidacy of Richard Nixon and the Lincoln Club when he got out of Navy intelligence. And he's been a man in the political scene for many, many years by reputation. But this is a faithless group of people. And if we could do anything like open up that grave and show that that is Vance Cooper in that grave, and Brooks Randall, one of his doubles, said that, and luckily I taped it with David Hartman years ago, that Brooks Randall was in that grave. I guess it was 10 years ago the discussion came up, and you could show how this government kidnaps people, takes their money, does the brain lobotomy in Boston, removes them, uses that $500 million, and parlays it into a way that they can eventually control the world. There was some confusion. David Emery was talking up on KFJC about the article I wrote about Howard Hughes being dead off a Greek island. I wrote that for Playgirl in 1974. I didn't get my information from reading a magazine. There was some disinformation or a wrong opinion. I wrote the article, and a woman named Stephanie Caruana came to my house, and she said, "What is the most important story you're doing?" And I said that Bruce Roberts in San Francisco in July of 72, pardon me, said that he gave me the whole entire gemstone file and said that I should investigate the Hughes story because Hughes had been buried off this Greek island, and he was the one who sent me at the time of Watergate to go back to all the back articles on Howard Hughes and all the books. And at the end of those 2 years, just 2 years of working on the Hughes story and the Watergate, I was convinced that Howard Hughes was dead at that time. So I was very anxious for when they would cash in the body. I used the term cash in, but when they flew it in 1976, and it was similar, the body was similar compared to a victim of a concentration camp. In fact, the Monterey Herald has the story. April the 5th, his Mormon assistants loaded Hughes' shriveled, comatose, drug-racked, 94-pound body on a stretcher and boarded a private airplane. They didn't want an autopsy in Mexico. For all purposes, he was dead. This is while he's running the multi-million dollar medical institute in Florida, and none of his doctors sent him to any hospital where anyone could see this body, and it was identical to the absolute starvation with needles stuck in the arms. Even if a person is comatose, they don't ask for those needles. At that point, if he's comatose, they could fly him right to Houston to an American hospital. But they kept him there. He didn't ask to be 94 pounds and in that condition. That's all part of the BS lies that float around. And if we exhumed that, we would understand William Casey and William Donovan and Alan Dulles and the entire Defense Department CIA plot under the Hughes Organization, as I said. Now, Freedom Magazine, published by the Scientologist, has articles on the Kennedy assassination this past issue. It just came out. Richard Sprague has written one called The Ultimate Cover-Up, The Role of Jack Ruby and the CIA and the Mind Control. And then there's another article by Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who's been writing continuously for them. Wonderful articles I haven't had time to share with you on Eisenhower and the Bay of Pigs and the administration prior to Kennedy's administration and the role of those activists in the murder of Kennedy. But of course, you see, it goes back to the Hughes story that Howard hired, under Howard, he wasn't conscious at all. The CIA used Mayhew and admitted we used a private organization so it wouldn't look like the CIA set up the mafia and the anti-Castro Cubans. And the bottom line of all of this is the story about Howard Hughes. Now, I know Richard Sprague and Colonel Prouty, Fletcher Prouty. I met him once, but we've corresponded through the years. And it is important, it's very important for new people to learn this back material. And what they're doing is invaluable. And I suggest you subscribe to Freedom Magazine. I've given you the address before. It's $12 a year. The address is 1301 North Catalina Street, Los Angeles, California, 90027. This is put out by the Scientologists. They have information on how to get the book on Interpol, J. Edgar Hoover with the Nazis, and they run continuous articles on mind control and the CIA mind control program. Dr. Thomas Satz writes for them almost every issue, S-Z-A-S-Z. And he talks about the illegal chemical and biological warfare testing. Well, it's a contradiction to say it is illegal chemical and biological warfare, because if it were illegal, they would be in jail. We wouldn't have advanced genetic sciences in Monterey County, and today California, tomorrow the world. It absolutely was legal because nobody has had a slap on the wrist for doing it, and they were all promoted. So it isn't any more illegal than blowing up the space shuttle Challenger. The next day they get a contract with the same people, the same inefficiency. It's perfectly legal. There's nothing abnormal in this country about drugging people. And it's not on the books that it's wrong, or if it's wrong, they go to jail. It's like 10 million illegal aliens. If we didn't let in 10 million, we had to let them in. You can slip a few through, but you can't slip 10 million. Therefore, the Immigration Department wants them. It's a contradiction to say it's illegal and have 10 million people here. Now, I'll get back, of course, through the years to the used material. But when these articles come out, and they're very pertinent, the real question is, who put in the Hughes Organization, the Five Mormon Mafia, set up the Medical Institute, has the drugs for these things, the experimentations, can work on AIDS, can give AIDS, can have intense wiping out of populations. If we don't get back to Hughes and Kramer and Kissinger and Willoughby, there's no reason to write about any of these other things anymore, because they're just simply academic. Now, a lot of people are asking me and calling, and you can't help miss the point that Dirty Harry will be mayor as of tomorrow of Carmel, California. Paul Laub, who had registered before Clint Eastwood, threw in his chance of running because he wasn't going to win anyway, and he didn't want to split the vote with Mr. Eastwood. Now, wherever you go, it's on the newsstands, and I write checks now. I'm out of town. Carmel, they all look up. I don't know what they thought Carmel was before. The Monterey Herald has a picture from yesterday's rally. They had trouble getting together. The streets are small and there were too many people. It's the title of the picture with Clint Eastwood and the other candidate, Mrs. Townsend, is titled Meeting a Mob. M-O-B, just like it says, meeting a mob. They mean people. But believe me, our little Monterey Peninsula, if you get your little map of California out or your atlas, take a little look because of what is happening to our area. We have a beautiful residential section along the ocean called Pebble Beach. Marvin Davis came out from Colorado, best friend of Frank Sinatra, put Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford with William Rogers of the Space Shuttle cover-up. On the board of 20th Century Fox, he bought half of Pebble Beach, and when Mr. Murdoch bought Pebble Beach, he put his money and owns 100% Pebble Beach in the area. Last week, I was listening to a radio broadcast, a tape that somebody gave me of a broadcast on the origin of these movies, such as the Red Dawn, made at MGM with Alexander Haig on the board of directors, presenting it to the president like it was the crown jewels. Well, they said Clint Eastwood with Dirty Harry was a precursor of that kind of movie. He set it off. So Dirty Harry, I'm nothing against him, and he was very low-key until he got rubbed the wrong way because of his own business establishment, the council turning down his desire to fix his property, which I really don't think was fair. So he retaliated, and he will be our mayor for 2 years. And along comes Pete Wilson from San Diego, and I hope I have more to do on the San Diego scandals this evening. If not, we'll do next week. Pete Wilson is part of a ball of wax. Henry Kissinger was out campaigning for him. Gerald Ford, the same team. Pete Wilson became the senator from California, and he now is trying to redo the entire coastline. He came in with a plan on taking care of, in quotes, preservation of the coastline without the help of anyone at Big Sur. He wants to move in, so Marvin Davis has Pebble Beach. Pete Wilson wants to direct the activity of Big Sur, and in between we have Dirty Harry in Carmel. Pete Wilson became senator when the 30 million fertile medflies were flown from Peru, the bellywack and home ground of Pat Robertson and J. Peter Grace Company, and goodness knows what contacts they have. 34 million fertile medflies were flown here so that melathion could be sprayed throughout the northern part of the state, and the CIA supplied the airplanes for spraying the people, and that media propaganda and the chemical activities that went on pushed Jerry Brown out of running for the Senate. See, we only have two senators, but they vote in a block. So whatever state you're listening to this, our Wilson is your senator too. And so Pete Wilson is pushing around Big Sur, as I say. Eastwood's in Carmel, and Marvin Davis owns Pebble Beach. And what they're going to do is take a choice area, and it is choice. That's why I moved up here. I absolutely love Carmel, and turn it into a Monte Carlo place for the rich and the very rich. It started out as an artist colony years ago. It was choice artist colony because it was so foggy and the weather unpredictable, and the houses were so tiny that they could live here cheaply. And, well, the rest is history. Now, in Carmel, in Monterey County, I mentioned just last week that Arthur Dunn has been singled out by Lyndon LaRouche to run against Leon Panetta. The San Francisco Chronicle had a large story. Democrats vow LaRouche won't win again, and they list all the California candidates, and of course, they're the most liberal in the state. Sala Burton, Barbara Boxer, Roy Dullums, Pete Stark, Leon Panetta, Mel Levine in Los Angeles, Merv Dimely, and so forth. Now, they have put these candidates against them. Can LaRouche win in this area? I've mentioned it to you before. We have the six largest military establishments that anyone needs in this country, to tell you the truth. We have the Fort Ord, the Kashawa, the Navy Postgraduate School, the Presidio, where Lee Harvey Oswald got his language instructions before he went to the Soviet Union, 100 Liggett with the laser weapons that they have developed for the Star of War. They worked 20 years to get ready for the laser Star Wars at 100 Liggett, and the Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies, which is a CIA training location, and the head of that is John J. McCloy, former CIA director under Kennedy. And the interesting thing, I might have mentioned this before about Art Dunn, I did say he's running. I happen to know the man in the area. But Leon Panetta lives in this area. I've corresponded with him. I've begged him, go into Fritz Kramer. I've given him all the material. And, you know, sharing offices with Daniel Graham of Star Wars. And, of course, in our area, Mr. Arthur Dunn is running against the fact that Leon Panetta won't support Star Wars. He lives just down Carmel Valley Road. It isn't 2 miles from my house. He's home every vacation and in and out in summer and holidays. His wife, Sylvia, runs the office down Alvarado Street when he's in town. I'm allowed like 3 or 4 minutes to see him. You can do 23 years' work. You've got 3 minutes to say what you want and get out, and I get a very nice letter if there's any more I can do for you. He's 2 miles from me. I consider my work a national treasure. I think it's very important research. I have important things to say to him, a congressman, and now a man is put in by not only LaRouche, but the military. They're all part of the same package. We don't know how much money LaRouche gets from the Defense Department, and I imagine it's quite a bit for what he's doing. So the question is really silly, because all of you have your opinions one way or the other. Would Leon Panetta have ever sat down and listened to One World Watchers program in 15 years? He hasn't. So does he deserve Arthur Dunn as a candidate? Probably. I think so. He may not stop him anyway, and he may stop him totally. But the point is that people come along like Dirty Harry, and they move into area where there's more military to vote than anything else. The more, if they all registered and caught on, or if they're instructed to follow Arthur Dunn, we don't know his tentacles. He comes out of here from the East, Columbia University, an attorney, and so forth. Although I've known him personally, I don't know that much about his military links. But I bring up the practical question of research. Who uses it if your own congressman doesn't use it? If he lives 2 miles down your house and doesn't even know, except for an occasional hello, what you're trying to say, how well can he represent you or me, and how long can they survive when the bulldozer comes along? Same way all the farmers voted for Ronald Reagan. How long can they survive if they don't know about Ronald Reagan and what he did to the farms in California? Now, I bring this up because this morning on the news, it was Channel 7, ABC News, David Hartman was introducing, he had three people from Kent State talking about the anniversary of Kent State isn't until May the 4th, when the National Guardsmen killed 4 students and wounded 9 others. But he introduced the president of the university and the artist who had a visual image of a monument that's going to be put there. And the conversation was interesting to me, particularly because Kent State was a sore point in my research, or a bitter point, because it was the height of the Vietnam War. Things were happening in this country that were so terrible. And when the National Guardsmen shot down these students, 9 were shot and 4 were killed, instead of getting angry, the American people went into a shell. They didn't have shooting of this kind in this country, and they didn't have the courage that it developed in these dictatorships to stand up, and many die before you get the truth. But the dean of the university, his name is Dean Michael Schwartz, was on television, and one of the students who was shot was on television, and, as I say, the architect. And they were talking about the monument, and Mr. Schwartz was asked by David Hartman, what will be the response, you know, to put this in, this Kent State memorial? It's been a long time, a whole new generation, and what will be the response of this 16, 17 years later? And Mr. Schwartz said the support on the campus, on the community, is very good. He said, and this is so important, I hope to provoke questions. I hope there is an inquiry as to what happened to Kent State. I hope people ask questions about what happened here, about the quality of their lives in America today. And that's exactly what I've been trying to say, 15 years on the air, 23 years of research. What is the quality? What does Kent State mean to you in 1970? How can you relate to that to 1986? What do you feel about that? Because, you see, we're spending, already acknowledged, we've put $1 billion into Nicaragua. We've put $1 billion into El Salvador. This is all run by Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and that gang. Kissinger was given Central America by Reagan after he messes up Middle East and Southeast Asia and Africa and South America. We have spent about $30 million the last 3 weeks for exercises in the Gulf of Sidra to provoke one of the smallest people on planet Earth so we can get more weapons going. In 1970, I was very active politically. I started my first radio program in 1971. I was active in the Peace and Freedom Party. As a matter of fact, the man running against Dirty Harry, the man who ran out of the race and gave it to him, this Paul Laub, was an Army intelligence G2 while he was disguised as a hippie during this period. My friends and I went through this whole thing. He was selling the India-Burma cloths and the paper to wrap your smokes up, you know what, and bought the first sandal store, the one and only sandal spot in town. That was his first purchase before getting a lot of expensive property here. The one who's blowing the elections, turning it away so that he can give it to Clint Eastwood, getting out of the race. It won't, as I say, won't be divided. So I went through all this locally and politically and was doing research at this time. But people were so frightened by Kent State that they withdrew. They went into their shell. I thought they would wake up and say, hey, it's not only Vietnam, it's America. But they didn't. 1970, what had passed before these four students died? John Kennedy assassination, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Malcolm X, Medgar Evers, Jim Garrison had arrested Clay Shaw, and the Ohio people wouldn't help him. Governor Rhodes held back the extradition of Gordon Novell, an important person not only in the Kennedy assassination, but today with his offices in New Orleans and the machinery he does with John DeLorean, traveling around and getting him off and the connections of DeLorean to the highest echelons of government. Now, Governor Rhodes is running again. Former Governor Rhodes is running right now, March 18th, 1986. There's a long article in the Washington Post. Ex-governor tries comeback in Ohio. He's the man that gave the orders that told them to shoot at Kent State. He's the man that wouldn't extradite Gordon Novell and help Jim Garrison prosecute Clay Shaw with their links to California, to Edgar Eugene Bradley. Ronald Reagan and Ed Meese kept him in California. There are links to Reagan and Meese, to Governor Rhodes, to Gordon Novell, to the murder of Kennedy. It all goes back to that. And in 1970, the people all hid. They put their heads between their legs. If they're going to shoot in America, forget it. And let's get on with matters, just as they covered up the story of Kurt Waldheim that was always available in the National Archives. They covered up the Nixon era, the Kennedy era, the Nazification of America, and you see it progresses every day to get worse. It doesn't get better. In 1970, that same year, was when Joseph Jablonski of the Mine Workers Union was murdered with his wife and family. The Chicago 7 trial was going on, where they were convicted for crossing state lines that they could use later because they went to a convention in Chicago in 1968. That was when the American troops went into Cambodia, the incursion that Nixon brought in. Nixon put in by the Lincoln Club, by Howard Hughes and the Hughes Organization in California. And after the Kent State shooting, there were two black students killed at Jackson State, Mississippi, which was covered up by most of the major media. And in 1970, Henry Kissinger signed the papers to spend millions of dollars to kill Salvador Allende in Chile. And Henry Kissinger is still the floating ambassador of the United States with his finger in every dirty, filthy pie that's going on. And that's why I want to know about Fritz Kramer. And as I say, Nixon gave the orders for the Cambodian, and it was close to Governor Rhodes for the whole Watergate story. So the history that he's president of Kent State, the history is important. He said, I want to provoke questions, and I hope that we will ask what happened here in Kent State in 1970, and how about the quality of our lives today? That's what he said. Luckily, I taped it off the TV. I love the video recorder. A listener, a long friend, and his wife got it for me, and I can capture those moments, because you can't read an article that doesn't go back to the past, to, we'll say, the murder of John Kennedy, and take it up to today. And now a university president is asking about the quality of our life. Is there a relationship between that? And while he's asking that, Governor Rhodes is running there in Ohio and has a very good chance of being reelected because of the scandals of the Democrats and their links to Marvin Warner and the bank collapsing and the mafia connections. So you have two evils in Ohio. There isn't a lesser of two evils, but there's chicanery and dirty tricks and spilled money and banks closing and mafia and death squads and also the headquarters of Permandex in Columbus, Ohio, and the teams that are sent around the world to murder. So the awareness that our quality is bad, I want you to sit here, students, and ask yourself questions, is a very first step, an important step to some of the problems today, to go back to that time period and see where those very people are today and recognize them and know what they did and know how they still are operating, running for office and influencing our elections. I'll take a 1 minute break and then continue now with some more of the horrendous news of the week.